Thanks everybody for tuning into the Shore Thing today. It is February 7th. Warren and Ryan here with you. We will be talking. We'll talk a little probably Super Bowl, NFL, talk some Olympics. NBA trade deadline is coming up on Thursday, so we could touch on that as well. Things going around in the association. Lots. I feel like the NBA, it's just like lingering. It's just backseat more than in the past, I would feel like, but there's some interesting storylines in the NBA. So we'll touch on that. Check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the iHeartRadio app. Brian, how's it going? Did you you survive the fake snowpocalypse of 2022?
Yeah, the snowpocalypse junior over here. Yeah, we survived it. It was actually got not super bad, but kind of bad over here. Our the road in our neighborhood, that thing was an ice rink. And then the road in and out of our neighborhood was an ice rink. And then 380, the exact same thing. So we didn't travel. We didn't go anywhere Thursday or Friday. I walked over to the Walmart on Friday morning. And as I was walking there, because it's maybe, I don't know, 100 yards away, the Walmart, a couple cars spun out driving into our neighborhood. So I was like, all right, good call, walking and not driving. But yeah, we made it. We had electricity the entire time. So that made things a lot easier, a lot better. But we just kind of stuck around, hung around the house. Didn't do a whole lot until probably Saturday was the first day we ventured out and got back into our normal routine over here.
Yeah, the roads were bad in the morning on Friday. But yeah, even like Thursday afternoon, it was fine. I went out, I think. Was Thursday the day it was cloudy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, I didn't go out Thursday. Thursday was bad all day. Friday afternoon, I went out and the roads were fine.
Yeah. Friday was when they started lightening up a little bit. But like I said, even in our neighborhood and in and around, for whatever reason, that things were just not thawing out at all. So we were locked in here.
Yeah. We were Friday afternoon. We were pretty good over here, which was good. But Thursday was bad.
No,
Thursday was bad. I did have a failed attempt at a viral TikTok of playing golf in the snow. Didn't work out, so we'll have to go back to the drawing board on that one. I was in it for the content. I actually wasn't that bad out there. Played a par 5, made a par. Shout out to me.
How'd you find your ball?
Huh?
How'd you find your ball?
Well, I was gonna use a yellow ball, but in my bag I didn't have any yellow balls. Oh. But I ended up using like a soccer ball.
Okay.
But the thing was that the snow was so like compact, it would just sit on top.
Yeah.
Like it didn't sink. It didn't go to the bottom, since there was that sleet and ice or whatever. It was pretty compact. So it wasn't that hard to find. And you could kind of see where it like landed.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the trail for the roll.
Yeah.
Failed attempt at TikTok. I messed up though. I posted the wrong video first, and then I deleted it, and it looked like I was trying to post another video in the algorithm. Like I totally. And if you delete it quickly after when it's not getting views, then it thinks you're trying to get in another algorithm, so it put your video down. And I knew that. I totally messed it up. So operator error on that. But no, it was fine. And now I think we're in the clear going forward with the weather. So that's the old person weather talk of the podcast.
Yep.
what do you got to do? Oh, talk about the weather. All right. A little Super Bowl here before on Thursday, we'll have all of our props, for the game all of our props for the game, plenty of them to be had. I do think that this is though, there's always the week where it's kind of a
lull.
Yeah, it's the lull. It's the lull. We obviously had not saying that the NFL is out of the news, because the NFL was in the full swing of the news cycle last week, but we're in the lull of talking about the game. And I don't really have a feel on this or anything like that. But I think that I was hoping for Chiefs. You know, we talked about this after the championship. I was hoping for Chiefs Rams. I thought that would be the best like matchup that you could get. But the storylines are not lacking in this. I'll say that in the Super Bowl.
No, for sure not. I mean, you have now. Granted, while you're not wrong, it seems like the same 3, 4, 5 storylines are just getting beat to death over and over again. But there are definitely lots of angles and storylines. You know, obviously the Matt Stafford storyline, Sean McVay, see if he can get over the hump. And then this spectacular run that the Bengals have been on with Joe Burrow at the head of it, and kind of continuing his Joe Cool or Joe Burr persona that's been going on since the playoffs started. I mean, if you want to, you can count it back to, you know, winning the national championship and him sitting on the couch smoking that cigar. But yeah, I mean, tons of storylines and angles to take a look at this game outside of what's just going to go on the field. Because I think everyone, I don't know, for the most part, I feel like everyone's kind of leaning one way, which would be the Rams, but also holding out hope that the storyline and the storybook ending kind of comes to fruition for Joe Burrow. And this run that the Bengals are going on. But at the same time, I think people want the storybook ending for Matt Stafford to kind of finally get a Super Bowl ring. So there's a lot of people on both sides of what their rooting interest might be.
Yeah, I think the storybook, I think, has to be Matt Stafford and not Burrow.
Agreed. Yeah, like, no, for sure.
He's in his second year. I mean, it's been a nice season. They've surprised everybody, but I wouldn't say this is like, oh my God. It'd be more of a shocking than a shocking win for the Bengals to win the Super Bowl than the Rams. The Rams would be the storybook ending. I would think, just because Stafford, and just on the Matt Stafford storyline, and you could go with Aaron Donald too, being one of the most dominant players in the NFL the past three to five years.
Yeah,
he gets his Super Bowl. McVay, I don't know about the storyline on that, but like the storybook story, the guy's 36, but he's been a punching bag for the last, ever since they lost the Super Bowl. Yeah. He's been everybody's target and for the young offensive mind and the analytics community or whatever, they just go at him when he doesn't really, at least when it comes to game decisions, game management decisions, use analytics that well. But he's been target number one for people. And so far, as we've said, everything that he's done to get an upgraded quarterback has worked out. And I do think it is going to be interesting. Like, so we've talked a lot about the Rams. They made a bunch of trades for their team with Ramsey, Stafford, and then Von Miller. You could say that the Bengals built through the draft they did with Burrow and Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. But like their defense, which has been a huge catalyst for why they're in the playoff or in the Super Bowl, like a lot of those guys, five key players of those have been like through free agency. So it wasn't like they've really, yeah, it's spots they've built through the draft, but key spots they went through free agency on 1 year deals and guys have stepped up. So there's two ways of looking at how to build a roster.
Yeah. And you know, to the Bengals' credit too, they lost one of their top defenders in William Jackson. The third, he ventured over to Washington. He's probably kicking himself in the butt now for doing that. But hey, what are you going to do? You know, he was a great, great corner for them for a few years. And like you said, he leaves town and they were able to fill some spots and they've had some guys step up. You know, we saw Sam Hubbard have a great game against the Chiefs. Trey Hendrickson's been fantastic all year long, getting tons of sacks, tons of pressure. So, you know, they haven't had a great defense. They haven't had a bad defense. It's kind of been right in the middle there, you know, 15th to 20th all year long, but it's really stepped up here in the postseason. Like you said, holding the Chiefs to, what was it, 3 points in the second half and yep, really having some big time stops, obviously, you know, holding the Titans and Derrick Henry, who we both agree wasn't completely healthy, to, you know, holding him to at bay, but still, you know, some big time picks in that game as well. So like you said, they've been able to come together at the right time and get hot at the perfect time and see what they can do against this Sean McVay offense led by Stafford and one of the better seasons, one of the best seasons we've seen by a wide receiver in Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. And I don't get ready, because if Stafford wins the Super Bowl, Hall of Fame is going to be in his future.
Yeah.
I know people might think that's crazy, but he's got the number. Like, people in Detroit were saying, if was he a Hall of Famer in Detroit? Now it was just like, oh, look at the numbers. He's in the could be a Hall of Famer, but if he wins a Super Bowl, he's going right to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, agreed.
For that, and another thing I got on this, this is going to be Al Michaels' last game with NBC.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to win to Amazon. Don't know who is going to join him at Amazon. Maybe Troy. Maybe Sean Payton. Who knows? But everybody's Amazon Prime's going up because they got the Thursday night games. But Al is going to he hasn't officially said it, but he's probably going to Amazon. And Troy, he's been doing they got their negotiations coming up with Fox. I don't know why you wouldn't want to go to Amazon. I know I like him and Joe Buck a lot, but if you look at it from the perspective of I'm going to work Wednesday and Thursday. No, excuse me. He's not going to be able to get the playoffs. Amazon's not getting any playoff games. But he's going to get to work Wednesday and Thursday and then be back at home on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the week and then just be gone like 2 days. Why would you not take the Thursday night schedule? You're going to be making a ton of money. And like what he was doing with Fox, he was doing two games a week sometimes when they had the national game of the week. I don't get why these guys don't. Why they wouldn't want to go to Thursday night, because then they could be back for the weekends.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess it just depends on how much he likes working, how much he likes to do it. I mean, we saw him obviously make the comment about wishing they were calling the Cowboys game this postseason. So if he likes doing the big games like that, maybe he wants to stick around. Obviously, he and Joe Buck have a great thing going in that booth. So, you know, maybe you put the bag aside and just want to continue something that you're good at, something that people enjoy, and doing it with somebody that you enjoy doing it with. I mean, whenever you hear Troy or Joe Buck talk about the other guy, that's always, you know, with glowing review. Obviously, they're not going to trash the guy, but you can always tell if somebody is being fake or not genuine. And both of those guys seem to really enjoy working with each other, and they do a great job. So, you know, me personally, selfishly, hopefully he stays at Fox and continues doing this with Joe Buck, because I enjoy listening to them and watching them call a game. But I think him and Al Michaels, you put anybody with Al Michaels, they're probably going to be pretty good, because he does a great job of teeing guys up, and he's just, you know, one of the best to do it anyway.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's going to be interesting what Amazon does. And
if the Rams win the Super Bowl, it might be Sean McVay in the booth with Al Michaels.
I know we talked about that last week, that rumor about how he would leave to go work in TV. Which I would be surprised that a guy like 36 would do that, because he still probably likes the grind and everything. But like Sean Payton, I know he says he's not going to be done coaching, and he probably wants to coach. Obviously, great move for him, just bailing when the going gets tough in New Orleans with the cap situation and no quarterback and everything. But like, how many times did people think that Bill Cowher was going to come back to coach after he went to TV?
Yeah.
Like, they realize that the lifestyle is so much easier when they're in TV than it is when they're coaching. They got to work a quarter of the hours. They got to go to a place for 1 or 2 days. They'll fly private. They'll fly back. Like, whenever they call a game, these guys are back. If they call a Sunday night game, they're gonna be back at like 2 a.m. or whatever, because they'll fly private and they're back wherever they live, and it's a lot better. Like especially Sean Payton, if he doesn't want to coach, or I'm always curious on, oh yeah, I'm gonna coach, but I'm gonna go work in TV for a year. Like, how many coaches go into TV for a year and then like immediately go back to coaching?
Yeah, not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Like, Gruden waited like 10 years to go back, and that was only because the Raiders gave him 10 mil a year. Like, there's Urban Meyer did it. He went to TV for, 3 years or whatever? But I think he definitely regrets the decision of going to the NFL. But, like, you don't see that many guys that they're like, wow, I like this TV gig.
Yeah, it's easier. You probably make right around the same amount of money, or if not a little bit more. In a lot of instances, and like you said, you know, you get to
sit back and relax a little bit more. It's not the day in and day out grind of always trying to put together game plans, scheming in and out, you know, things like that. So, you know, Sean Payton, I definitely think he's going to come back. He'll play at some point. I think he just kind of sees what he's done with that roster and the cap hell they're in and, you know, their quarterback situation. He's like, you know what? I need to get out while it's, you know, while the stock price is going down. So it doesn't look like it's on me. And then once, you know, I'm ready to come back or once the Cowboys job opens back up, hey, here I am.
And he could say, look, I took Ian Book, Taysom Hill, Trevor Siemian to a 9-8 record.
Correct.
When Drew Brees was out. And I didn't have Michael Thomas. Now, that might have been self-inflicted by the Saints there. I know he was hurt, but that could have been a self-inflicted issue as well. But he could do that. All right. And so then the NFL coaching roundup, we have Mike McDaniel, who has now been hired by Miami, which obviously I think Miami's number one choice was Harbaugh. But after their lawsuit came out, they really couldn't hire him. So they hired Mike McDaniel, who is biracial, but good offensive, young offensive mind. One of the Shanahan cronies that has been with him throughout in Washington. Now he gets his job. He's been a press conference highlight reel guy. So we'll have to see what he's got going on there. And then the Texans, I think, are the only job open. And now they told Josh McCown that they're not going to hire him after they pretty much wanted to hire Josh McCown the whole time, but didn't want the public backlash, which I would say that's not committed to your guns there. And now they're going to go hire Lovie Smith, who I didn't even realize Lovie Smith was coaching for the Texans.
Agreed. Yeah, I didn't either.
Didn't know he was an assistant coach for the Texans last year. And I would they have to be. Why would they not have just kept David Culley if this situation was going on?
Well,
this doesn't make any sense.
I think there were some material changes, if you will. I guarantee you they were going to go the Josh McCown route, and then the Brian Flores lawsuit comes about. And credit to the Texans in a sense, where was it Bob McNair, the owner out there? Usually not great at decision making. Usually
it's
not
Cal
great.
McNair because Bob died.
Correct. Yeah, Cal McNair. Yes. They're not known for making their, you know, great decisions day in and day out, but I think pulling the ripcord on Josh McCown, just kind of, you know, reading the room a little bit, you know, it probably, like I said, the decision was going to go, hey, David Culley, okay, Josh McCown, and then all this stuff comes up, the huge shitstorm that it's started. And so, you know, what are you going to do? Well, let's go with a guy that's already been a coach in the league. He's seen success in the league. And he's already right here in our coaching staff, so let's just bring him in. And who knows if he's going to be a one-and-done guy as well, or if they're going to try to run it back again, or what. But I think that they kind of had to pivot there at the end after the Brian Flores stuff came out.
But they could have hired Josh McCown 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and were dragging their feet then.
Yeah.
Because they were scared. Like, this didn't have to come. This didn't happen to be. Oh, well, it ended up being with the Flores thing, but they wanted Josh McCown to be hired. They wanted to hire him last year. They got scared. And then this year they interviewed him again, and they got bullied by public pressure in Houston for not hiring him before the Brian Flores stuff even happened. Like, they did not stick to their guns, I'll say, on that, because that's pretty much who they wanted, I think. And they decided, oh, they were just dragging their feet. And then they still could have hired McCown after the Brian Flores thing. They would have got criticized, just like they would have got criticized probably for hiring him to begin with. But they just, I think they rolled over there. They were just dragging their feet.
No, 100%. And maybe too, part of it might have been they wanted to bring Brian Flores in to be their head coach, because, you know, he was the one of apparently making the push for Deshaun in Miami. And so, you know, maybe they figure if they bring in Brian Flores, then they can bring Deshaun back, you know, assuming all his legal troubles are cleared up. And then again, you know, maybe that was plan A, or, you know, Josh McCown was plan A. And then, you know, once that doesn't feel like it's right, then Brian Flores is option B. And now they're stuck and just going with Lovie just out of, you know, not a necessity or out of having to rather than wanting to. But I think David Culley sticking around would have been 100% the correct call.
The guy from Philly, the coordinator, Gannon, he was like number two, I think, or whatever.
Okay.
He was in the mix, the Eagles defensive coordinator. It was like him or McCown. And they were just like, couple people in Houston and that organization wanted McCown, and then the other guys were like, oh, we're going to get a lot of backlash in Houston for hiring McCown, and we don't want to have to deal with it because we're already under such scrutiny. So let's figure out what we can do. And they drag their feet long enough. Like if you're the Texans, if you're someone that works in the Texans organization and you think someone is going to be a good coach and you've thought that they are going to be a good coach for the last two cycles and haven't hired them, why not just stick to your conviction and say, you know what? We know Josh McCown's never coached the NFL before. He's been a player in the NFL for what, 15 years? And he's hung around in his career at the end for like the last 4 or 5 years as a backup or a third string guy, because everybody knew how good in the locker room he was. He was pretty much just a quarterback's coach, but playing the quarterback position or being a backup. You could just say, this is our guy. We're sticking to our convictions, and that's who we're going to hire. And people could criticize you for that, but at least you're going to say, hey, this is the guy we wanted the whole time. Now, like, when does it ever work if a coach is like your fifth choice and you're like, well, we interviewed all these other guys, but it's not really our first choice. It's our third or fourth choice. Like that doesn't usually work out well, unless you're the Cowboys and it's a quarterback that you try and draft, then it works out well.
Yeah, no doubt. No, you're right. You're 100% right. You know, again, this kind of goes back to our conversation we had last week about poor decision-making made by poor ownership. And I think this fits the mold perfectly for the Texans situation and what they find themselves, the head coach with the, you know, with their head coach decision.
No. Yeah. I would agree on that with the Texans. All right, we'll talk more about the, as we said, Super Bowl on Thursday with our props. I've already given out a couple. We'll be back
real quick before we transition too quick. And we're still on the head coaching thing in the NFL. Do yourself a favor. Go ahead and watch a Sean Payton movie. It's not too bad.
Really? I heard it's been getting trashed.
Look, it's not a good movie. Like, it's not going to win any Oscars.
Why am I going to watch a not good movie then?
Because it's entertaining. It's funny. It's heartwarming. It's heartfelt. There's some good one-liners in there. It's kind of corny, kind of cheesy, much of the way the Adam Sandler movies of late have gone. But look, by and large, like I said, like the actual movie itself, it's fine. It's not going to be up for any awards, which I don't think that's what they're going for. But just as like pure entertainment, like a 6.8 maybe.
Wow. Whoa.
Look, not bad. Maybe it's the dad in me that found it, you know, kind of entertaining, kind of funny. But like I said, not the worst movie I've seen, you know.
What's it
far.
Called?
Home Team.
What do you think the Rotten Tomatoes rating was?
Well, okay, the critic score probably.
But say the audience score and then the critic score.
Audience score, like there's gonna be a bunch of haters. It's probably like somewhere like around like 40%.
51%.
Okay, I almost said 50. And then the critic score is probably like 15.
21.
Yeah. Look, I mean, for that movie, a 51% audience rating, I think that's pretty good.
Taylor Lautner's in it?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. I know. I was shocked to see that as well. But I don't know what he was doing, or if that was the guy they had in mind. If this was a Texans situation, he was like their fifth or sixth option. But he plays like the head coach of the team before Sean Payton comes in. But like I said, typical Adam Sandler movie as of the last like 15 years. But just pure entertainment, funny factor, not terrible.
So
you can watch a lot worse.
He produced it. Or
correct.
He directed it?
Directed it, yeah.
So that's why Kevin James is the Sean Payton.
Right, and Rob Schneider's in it.
And I see Rob Schneider's in there, too.
Yep. I mean, he's the usual cast of characters.
Yeah, do you want me to read some critics and their the one-liners or whatever they
might as well. Yeah, we're here.
All right, so this guy, Rafer Guzman from Newsday, says a true story that shines away from the truth. Someone from Amy Nicholson from the New York Times says the fact that the facts have been rejiggered to fit the Sandman's formula. Our hero is a seething screw up and everyone else is even worse. A guy from Variety says a film that mostly plays as a checklist of scenes and tropes required from a Sandler back sports comedy.
What'd
from
I tell you?
from half-hearted background pratfalls to extraneous comic relief sideshows. And then we'll do one more. It is a shadow representation of sports, parenthood, and comedy with almost no laughs.
Oh, that's false. There are tons of laughs, plenty of laughs. Some corny, cheesy ones, but laughs nonetheless.
I was gonna say if they were doing a private screening of this in my backyard, I wouldn't go out to watch it.
Oh, come on.
What? There's other stuff. I want to watch the Tinder movie.
That's actually pretty good. Watched that last night. That was actually pretty wild. Some people are just dumb.
Yeah, I want to watch. I got to go watch that. I've been watching a bunch of the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. We can segue. I hit a listen to this. These eyeballs were watching short track speed skating today. This morning it was on USA. Just put USA on. Plus 275 gold medal winner in the women's 1,000 meter right here. Fontana from Italy, fifth Olympics. She's won 10 medals. This was her 10th medal, second gold. Great inside pass on the last lap for the win. It was electrifying. And I will say they're probably showing the short track on primetime tonight. It won't be live, obviously, because it already happened. But you should, if you're listening to this before, you should stick around and watch it, because I bet they'll probably show like the quarter, semis, and finals. There were crashes left and right. I mean, they were crashing all over the place. It was exciting stuff.
Yeah, speed skating for me is like one of the premier events in the Olympics. You know, you go back to Apollo Anton Ono days where he kind of, you know, ran circles around guys, no pun intended, or pun intended. But the short track is just absolutely electric.
Yes, electrifying there. So got that. I think they're replaying women's luge the first two runs. That was on USA this morning. Carnage all over the track too. That's worth watching. The men's luge was good. I don't think any of the men crashed, but the women could not handle this turn 13 at this track, and they were crashing all over the place. There were some bad wrecks there. It was carnage. But the Olympics ratings obviously down big. But I would say that's as expected. But I was watching some of that this morning and a little last night. I don't know. I know you said Jamie was excited about the Olympics, but I don't know what you guys have watched.
Yeah, no, we've watched. So with the advent of the snowpocalypse we had this weekend, turns out my kid really likes snow and ice. He wanted to spend the entire time outside, just not even like playing in the snow. He'd pick some of it up, just kind of stomping around, playing in it, whatever. So that, you know, we were kind of shocked by that. He, like I said, did not want to come inside. So I was watching, one of the skiing, it wasn't alpine. I think it might've been freestyle. Yeah. Actually, I think it was freestyle. Oh no. What it started off was snowboarding. They were doing the slope style on the snowboard.
Yeah.
And he was just absolutely entranced by it. So he was, we were watching that over and over again, or the whole time it was on. Watching a lot of the other skiing stuff, like I said, the freestyle after that. So we've been keeping up with some of the off kilter stuff that we don't normally watch. It was funny because I turned it on. It was the biathlon and it had just started. And, you know, when they all start off, they're all in that big cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie was like, how the heck can they ski with all the, you know, so close together like that? You know, they got these long skis. How do they, you know, not fall? And I was like, well, it really starts spacing out once you start shooting. And she goes, shooting what? She goes, they shoot. And I go, yeah, you see those things on their back, those are guns. She goes, what are they shooting? I said, they shoot each other, and then whoever the last man standing is wins. And she had this look on her face like she knew I was bullshitting her, but she couldn't tell. And I was like, no, they shoot targets, and then it's kind of like a, you know, not like a relay race, but you have different checkpoints where you got to stop and shoot a target and then you keep it going. But she had no idea that the sport of biathlon even existed.
Love biathlon. It's on USA right now, a replay.
Yeah. I think they said Americans have never meddled in the biathlon.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
I thought Texas would be great in it. They love skiing and they love shooting.
I'm saying America in general. I mean, we got all the skiing and stuff up in Utah, Colorado, Arizona. Arizona loves their guns, but nonetheless, no biathlon winners for the U.S.
And you don't even need to train on snow for cross country skiing. You could just break out some rollerblades with some, I've seen that before. Like one of the trainers goes to, in the summer, they go to the, like they live in like someplace warm and they're out there cross country skiing on rollerblades with the ski poles on the street.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild to see on video, but that's what they do.
Yeah.
But all right, that's the Olympics. I don't know if Sean White, I don't know when he's doing his thing. But I was looking at some odds. And he was like plus 500 to win half pipe.
Wow. He's old though, man. He's older
than 35. Us. He's 35. I know. It's his fifth Olympics. Yeah. His first one was 20 years ago, which is insane. But maybe for like Glory's last shot to get gold, if like you could get him the medal and plus money, I think that's not bad.
Yeah.
I've been infatuated by the staring at the Olympic odds. I did a skiing alpine skiing parlay. I called it the Power Couple Parlay. Michaela Schifrin and her boyfriend to win gold in their events.
Oh, Schifrin crashed.
She didn't even. What do you call that? Crash, or she just like fell.
Fell. Yeah.
She just like skied out five gates in. So it was her to win that event, and then her boyfriend to win who's from Norway, dude, to win. He was the favorite in the downhill. It paid. She was plus 325. She was the second favorite. It paid like 12-1. I was like, oh, this is good. This is something fun. And like, didn't even make it five gates in. Couldn't even enjoy it for five gates. That was a tough scene. But yeah, she just fell down. Fell down there. All right, let's get to the NBA deadline, trade deadline going on right now. Coming up on Thursday, one team's already made a move. The Cavs. Don't really need to talk about them, even though they're probably testing to win the NBA title the way they're playing this year. The
I gotta say, I know when we jumped on this call, you were there was a little pep in your step. You were whistling Dixie over here, getting ready to roll.
Listen about the Cavs.
I don't know.
They're 33-21. Like, yeah, a win against the Pacers isn't gonna be a in the mood. Wake up in the pep in the step.
But adding Caris LeVert is, you know, would do that. But I have seen not backlash, but a lot of people saying that Caris LeVert, if he continues to play the way he's been playing, that he might screw up what the Cavs have been rolling with. So it has been some good, but also a lot of people that are kind of, you know, not buying all in on it just quite yet.
No, there's a lot of people not all in on Caris LeVert. From what I've read, he's a very hot and cold player from executives around the NBA. Like either you like him or you don't like him. But I mean, he was playing on a bad team with the Pacers, even though they do have talent. I could see how his true shooting percentage is like league average. He's only a 33% shooter from three. The thing is, he might not even, I know this is crazy, but he might not even start for the Cavs. His role is to just come in and be like the Ricky Rubio ball creator of the second unit. They needed someone to create, like, if when Garland's been out the last four games, they went, I want to say 3-1. They lost to the Rockets. Yeah, they went 3-1, but they're bad teams. Like, the offense is atrocious. Like, they have nobody that could drive to the hoop. They just needed another creator, and that's what they got in LeVert. So, yeah, that's hot and cold. But look, the Cavs went on a 19-0 run last night. The Cavalanche is a thing this year, and that must have been what it was like when the Warriors went on those insane runs. It's fun when your team does that. But yeah, no, there's a lot of hot and cold takes on the Caris LeVert trade. But okay, since we're on the Cavs, didn't really mean to bog down here. I didn't mean to bog down here. Did you seriously? I wasn't trying to do that. That was a snide 30-second remark about the Cavs, and then move on. But did you see what happened to them on Friday night?
You know, I wasn't super like, oh, yes. The 3-point play. The 3-pointer that wasn't a real 3-pointer, but it ended up being a real 3-pointer.
I haven't been like, I've talked about the Browns getting screwed by officiating a lot. This was a Friday night regular season against the Hornets. I was like legitimately furious at that call. Like, that was a shocking. I don't think I've ever seen a team in the NBA ever get gifted a free 3-pointer. Have you?
No.
And never. Then like, they don't even go review it. Like, I don't know if you could review that, but like, how do they not talk it out?
No, 100%. No, that was, You know, and it ended up being a close game there at the end. I think it was, what, a 1 or 2 point game there at the end. So, like, that did have an effect on the game a little bit.
Oh, it had a huge effect because the Cavs were up 10 and it got them down to 6 because they got a 3 and a technical. Yeah. And the guy made the tech. That was 4 free points they gifted him.
Yeah, that was absolutely. I mean, the whistle blew. I mean, so now we always see guys that are going up and knocking balls out of the basket after the whistle blows. Now you're really going to see guys doing that if this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, because the guys on the bench got the they came out and like swatted at him after the whistle blew and everything. And then the refs after the game said, "Oh, we shouldn't have given him those points." And the Cavs needed a foul. They got a foul call late on them, which was a foul, but. And then Love made 2 foul shots for them to win. No, the funniest thing about that game is that I don't think there's ever been a game where 2 fan bases have thought that the refs screwed them royally, like late in fourth quarter. There probably has been, but like the Hornets were pissed about the fouls down the stretch. And then the Cavs were pissed about the Hornets getting 4 free points. And whenever you mention anything about the Hornets getting 4 free points, their people would be like, well, that happened with like 6 minutes ago in the game. Well, duh, you got 4 free points. You weren't going to get those anyways. Yeah. But that was horrendous refereeing. Horrendous refereeing. But all right, the thing about the deadline I want to talk about, whatever is going on in Brooklyn, who knows what's going on there. They've lost 8 in a row. Harden, who knows what he's doing, but the Mavericks, I think the Mavs are in, they're in a little bit of this, I think they're in playoff purgatory. I'm going to say it like the roster isn't good enough to go far. They have the superstar to go far, but like the roster isn't good enough. 2 of their guys, Finney Smith and Brunson are up at the end of the year. And so like, if you keep them, you're going to have to probably re-sign them because they don't make enough. Finney Smith makes $4 million this year. Brunson makes like $2 million. That's not creating enough cap space for you to sign guys to that caliber of player. But then if you sign them, Finney Smith's going to make like $15 million. Brunson's going to make like $15 million. That's the roster you got for next year and the years going forward in Luka's prime, unless you make a big trade of like Porzingis, Hardaway, whatever's going on there. So like, what do they do? Do they trade Brunson? They try and get some assets to go into this offseason. I think they're stuck right now. They are in a predicament, and that's why I call it like contender outskirts, contender purgatory, because they have Luka, and we saw how well he played on Friday night. Another triple double last night. Like, he's just incredible. But the roster isn't around them for them to win a title, or I even think to make like the Western Conference Finals this year. Like, I just think they're a second round and out team. Maybe even first round and out, because they haven't shown you that they're able to win a playoff series. I know Porzingis he was hurt the first year. Last year, Carlisle didn't know how to use him, but I think they're just in like roster kind of purgatory, or like 5, 6, 7 seed. Just they don't know what to do.
100% agree. I think you laid it out there perfectly. They're very much a roster that's going to be good during the regular season. They'll make the playoffs. They might win their first series, but then after that, they don't really have anybody outside of Luka. I mean, Porzingis has been fine when he's healthy. Like you said, they've had some other guys step up this season to kind of keep them in that middle group of the Western Conference. But outside of that, I mean, this isn't a team that you're expecting to make a run unless they just get absolutely scalding hot. Especially the way the West is shaping up, they're fifth. There's probably all 4 of those teams ahead of them are much, much better than them. And I don't see them being able to get past any of them in the second round.
And I would even say if Jamal Murray comes back.
Yeah. But Denver ahead of them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cause Jokic is, I mean, Denver, weren't they like the one, they were what, 1 or 2 seed? They were definitely a top 4 team before Murray got hurt, and I thought that they were going to be a sleeper team to win the West.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You do have the guy that could take over a series and win you a series, if not 2.
Yeah.
So, like, they do have that in the playoffs. And the thing about the Mavs that has been great for them lately is that their defense has been – they've been playing some damn good defense. Like, they got they're like a top three defensive team since January. Like their defense has really, really turned it around. So they are able, if they have an off shooting night here or there, someone's not feeling it, that they can, that they can play defense and grind out a game like that. So that they do have the formula to win, but just from a long, like, do you really want to go into Luka's prime and your team is going to be the same team that he's had pretty much since the day he was drafted, minus Porzingis?
Correct.
Like, do you want to do that? I don't, I wouldn't be comfortable with just, hey, the core is Kleber, Finney-Smith, Hardaway Jr., Brunson, Porzingis, and like Dwight Powell. Like that doesn't, yeah, they all know their roles. They're very good at their roles, but that doesn't scream, we're going to beat the Suns, we're going to beat the Warriors in a playoff series. They do have the Grizzlies number, but like that doesn't even scream like, hey, we're going to beat, who's the fourth, the Jazz, when they're all healthy and running like that. That doesn't scream to me like we're going to the conference final. Like, I don't think I would want Luka that to be his team going forward. That's just, I don't know. I wouldn't like that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree. You know, like I said, you would like to see them add another piece that would kind of set them over the top. They thought they were getting that Porzingis. That hasn't been the case for the majority of his time here in Dallas. But you're absolutely right. I mean, Luka can win you, you know, in the playoffs, it kind of shifts a little bit. Luka can win you a playoff series. Now you get to the second round, especially being that fifth seed, if they happen to finish the season in that fifth spot, if they're able to get by the Jazz, you know, their next round presumably would be what, Memphis, or, you know, you said they have their number, but still, who knows what, when things,
well, they're the fifth right now, they would be,
they play the Suns. Correct. So, you know, that's a team that's just absolutely rolling right now. They have things figured out. Everyone knows their role in that offense and defensively. So, you know, it's just, if it doesn't happen this year, it needs to happen very, very, it needs to happen next year for the Mavs to add a couple more pieces to where this is a surefire, like, hey, we're going to be competing for maybe not just, you know, the one or two seed, but we're going to be competing for that playoff, or excuse me, that finals berth, that conference championship. Because if not, like you said, you kind of feel like Luka's years are wasted a little bit. His prime years are wasted a little bit with just having the same old roster every single season, year in and year out.
And they don't even have assets, like good assets to like get like McCollum or Beal. Like their first round picks are to New York or Atlanta every other year, which are, you can't trade any more first rounders unless you're going way, way ahead. They're just stuck. Like those guys would help. But if you do that, then you trade Porzingis and okay, that's fine. But then you're just kind of back at square one, I think. Like you don't get better. You need to add to Porzingis, but there's nobody that you can bring in that's good enough that could like add to him. They're just kind of stuck right now. I mean, they're playing good basketball, so that's good, but they're just kind of, I think from a roster addition wise, they're kind of stuck. Like I saw a rumor this week that said that they were offered a first round pick for a lottery protected first round pick for Dorian Finney-Smith, and they turned it down, which I guess that's good. I don't know. But if it's lottery protected, then you could try and get some assets. I don't know. That's why I'm not the GM. That's why they got Nico Harrison there, who's never been a GM before in his life. But he's got good relationships, so you'll see what he can do. It'll be interesting to see what's going on.
Yeah, because like you said, I mean, right now, I don't even, you know, you hear chatter leading up to the deadline of teams that are possibly in on a certain guy or different spots a certain guy might go. I haven't heard the Mavs mentioned at all. And like you said, I think a lot of it is because they just don't have any assets to trade. And a lot of their key guys that could be trade pieces, they're just that. They're key guys that they need to continue this thing rolling.
Yeah, maybe they look, okay, let's look at Hoops Rumor, see what they got. They haven't been mentioned with anybody in the last couple of days, but they were offered a late lottery pick for Dorian Finney-Smith. But who knows what they're... what they can do at the deadline. I don't really know. They're kind of stuck. They're kind of stuck as we just, 100%. As we talked about.
Also, I don't know if this is still a conversation or not, but if it is, I think it needs to stop. The Luka versus Trey conversation, like Luka's by and far like the better player. Like the Mavs got the better end of the deal.
For sure, but the Hawks have had better team success early on.
I guess true, but
they went to the Western Conference Finals. Luka's never won a playoffs game.
Eastern Conference
Finals. Or playoff series. Yeah. Eastern Conference Finals. Sorry. He's never won a playoff series.
But I wouldn't put that solely on the player. That's probably just a better job of the team building around him. But give me, if you're, you know, starting a franchise from the ground up, you're taking Luka 100 times.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Obviously. But it is a team game. And so far, Trae Young has had more team success than Luka.
No doubt.
But yeah, no, it goes back to team building. And the Hawks have built a good team around Trae Young. I know this year they're off to they're under 500 right now, but they've won 7 out of their last 10. So they're trying to turn around. But I also just think that's kind of like the Mavs fans of, because people last year, it's still like of the, who got the better end of the trade when they're watching Trae Young win playoff series in the Garden and then beat the Sixers, right?
Yeah.
And they're in the conference finals. Everyone's like, oh, wow, who got the better end of the deal? So there's like the chip on the shoulder type of thing.
Yeah.
But, Luka's the – how about the dunk he had Friday night? I didn't think he could do that.
Yeah, no kidding. And then that move last night, he had the – I mean, granted, it was against Clint Capella, but, you know, a little dribble crossover, step back, fake the shot, blow by, floater. I mean, guys got some tricks in his bag.
He does look skinnier right now.
He does. No, I would agree. I would agree. He's looking a little bit more svelte. Still a little thick, but not back to earlier in the season when he was Luka Doncic.
Yes. He still is Doncic, I think. But maybe 1C instead of 3Cs.
I would say 2Cs instead of 3Cs.
Okay. I thought you'd go C and a half.
Maybe. Maybe one uppercase C, one lowercase C.
All right. Anything else here? I got one thing.
Go ahead.
There was a DFW golfer yesterday won the Pebble Beach AT&T Pro-Am.
I did not see who that was. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was thinking the Harold Varner putt, but that was in the Asian.
Oh, game. that was the bone saw, the Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
It was Tom Hoagie. He went to TCU, beat Jordan by two shots yesterday. Spieth was leading down the stretch. Hoagie birdied four of his last five to knock off Spieth for his. That was his 203rd event. He got second 2 weeks ago in the American Express, and he took down Jordan. But Jordan looked good. Jordan might win this week. But he's coming back. His swing looks very, very weird. So do you want to hear the story about Spieth and Tom Hoagie?
Sure.
So Hoagie, I think, is like 36, 37, went to TCU. They were talking about this on the broadcast. This is from Doug Ferguson. He is now with the AP. They said that Spieth said, let me tell you about Tom Hoagie. When he gets in contention, he's not going to back down. So they asked Hoagie after the round and said, oh, hey, this is how Spieth, because he missed a playoff by like one shot, but played pretty well. He got unlucky. They told Tom Hoagie a month later about Spieth's prediction, and Hoagie was perplexed. He said that they hardly spent any time together and they've never played golf together before. Jordan lives in Dallas. Hoagie lives in Fort Worth. Obviously, Hoagie's 10 years older than Jordan around that. And Hoagie said the only connection with Jordan is I taught him how to play craps. So then they asked Jordan a couple weeks later the conversation that he had in Hawaii about Tom Hoagie. And he said, how did you know what to expect from Hoagie if you've never played golf with him? And he goes, because that's how he played craps.
Oh, nice little boom roasted.
Yeah, so that was kind of a funny back and forth there, or a funny story between two that did not have ever played golf, but good for Tom Hoagie. He was due for it when he was playing well.
Good for him. Hats off.
Hats off to Hoagie. And then we got the waste management this week. So that should be good there. Jordan, he's only 14-1. Still don't think that's a bad bet. But all right, anything else for you?
I think that's it. Let's get some baseball rolling here pretty soon, guys.
Yeah, let's get some baseball rolling. We could talk about that on Monday or next week. But did you see? Well, why not now? Did you see what they're going to do in AAA potentially this year when they play?
No.
Robot umps.
Oh, yes, I did see that. Yeah, they got the call up.
I think that doing it in AAA, I'm excited, but I think doing it in AAA is a bad idea.
Why?
Because you're going to have people that are going, like, why not do this in AA? Why not do it in A? Is it because of the infrastructure? But doing it in AAA where guys are going to be yo-yoing between Major League Baseball and then AAA, I think that's too big of a discrepancy. Like, if you stick it in AA, yeah, there's going to be guys coming up from A, and then guys are going to be coming down from AAA or getting called up to AAA. But, like, those guys are going to be a AA almost the whole year. Like, AAA, there's more fluctuation of rosters and stuff, and I think that's going to be a little bit of a issue with the with that. Based on that.
No, that's fair. That's a good point. Something I hadn't thought of, but you know where I stand with the robot umps either way. I guess this is one step closer. You know, if they're implementing in AAA, we're not too far off. And plus two, you know, the greatest umpire to ever live has retired in Joe West. So, you know, you can't get much better than that. So it's only going to get worse.
It's a real shame.
Real shame.
Was hoping him and Angel Hernandez could just die on the field umpiring a game.
if we had our way and we had storybook endings, that's exactly how it would go out.
That would be, wouldn't it be Joe West ejecting a manager and then his body just like falling dead right outside the dugout or at home plate, whatever.
Yeah. Punch out on like a ball a foot and a half off the plate to, you know, for the other team to win the World Series, and on the punch out, he punches out too.
Yeah, that would be it there. All right, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back Thursday with the props for the Super Bowl. Talk to you then.